Hi, this is Tom Vanderwell. You're about to hear a table reading of the play Ham, Buns, and Potato Salad, which was conducted on January 21st, 2012. The second draft of the script was completed after a similar table reading last year, and it yielded a number of great suggestions. Now, the purpose of this table reading is to hear the next draft aloud with different voices playing the various parts and to solicit feedback from the readers. In this recording, you will only hear the script reading. The feedback session was not recorded. The actors reading the parts are simply friends who agreed to take part. Only two people in the reading had read the first draft, so everyone is pretty much reading it cold. A couple of quick notes to help you as a listener. The extremely low-tech recording was made with a single microphone set up on a table in the middle of the room. Because some people were closer to the mic than others, and because some people's voices are stronger than others, you'll notice that some actors' voices are harder to hear than others. I'm sorry about that. I did the best I could with what I had. Second, the script contains many stage directions that describe what is taking place on stage. For the most part, I read these stage directions out loud from the script for everyone's benefit. So if you hear me describing what's taking place between the actors' lines, this is what I'm doing. The play is split into two acts and runs approximately an hour and 40 minutes total. Enjoy.
Really?
A little bit.
Okay. So we're going to go ahead, act one, scene one.
And from New York.
The house lights go down, and the audience hears, in the darkness, in the black of the darkness, a sound of a car on the highway, screeching brakes, and a horrendous crash. There are a few seconds of silence, and then the lights come up. We find ourselves in the backyard of two houses in Hebron, Iowa, population 318. The DeHaas house is set upstage right. Much of the action is set in this backyard. The Prinz house, stage left, is set closer downstage. There's a short stair leading up to the screened-in porch. In the backyard of the house, stage right, there are four lawn chairs set downstage center right. Far right, there's a small swing set with two swings. Two men in their 50s to 60s are engaged in conversation. They wear blue jeans or khakis with well-ironed short-sleeve plaid shirts, button-down collars, glowing white tennis shoes with dark socks. And so we begin.
That was the year that the boys went to state in basketball and lost to Fairfield in the semifinals.
That's right. Boy, those were the good years. The boys and girls went to state every year. The Kuiper brothers were on that team, weren't they?
Right, yeah. Frank and Jesse.
Yeah, boy, Frank and Jesse. Talk about outlaws. Isn't Frank in construction now?
Cement.
Oh, yeah. Outlaw, all right. I priced a new driveway a few years back. Talk about highway robbery.
Oh, yes. He's got that cement business over in Slater County. Jesse moved out west. Colorado, I think. Your wife would know. She keeps track of where everyone ends up.
Aren't you related to the Kuipers?
Oh, no, no, no. Well, now, wait a minute. Well, let's see. I guess by marriage I am. Yeah, by marriage. My wife's mom was a Kuiman, and her sister married a Kuiper.
Walter.
Yeah. Walter and Eunice would have been Frankie and Jesse's grandparents.
Lola Van Dam enters the backyard from the house, stage right. She carries two glasses of iced tea.
Weren't they cousins?
Walter and Eunice?
Yes. Yeah, they were. His grandmother and her grandfather were brother and sister, if I remember correctly.
Well, that explains a lot.
Used to see quite a bit of that back in those days. Weren't that many families around these parts. You were bound to marry someone who's related somehow.
Betty and I thought you boys could use a cool drink.
They take a glass from her with the thanks, and she sits down with them.
Where's Betty?
She's finishing up potato salad for the funeral. We got most of the ham buns made, but I think we may run out of buns. We'll put them in the deep freeze and take them over to the church in the morning. Any sign of him?
No.
Has anybody talked to him?
I don't know. I don't think so. Just the funeral home and maybe the preacher.
It's a shame. What is it now? 10 years since they left?
Oh, it's been at least 10. It's got to be 12.
12?
12? Are you sure?
It was the summer before Abby was born. She's going to be 12.
That's right.
12 years.
Well, I'll be.
Time flies.
Betty DeHaas enters from the DeHaas house. She's wiping her hands on her apron, walks up, and joins the crowd.
How are you boys doing out here? Any sign of Tommy?
Not yet. Only traffic has been Zach Vermeer driving his new car back and forth across town.
Where did Zach get that car?
They were seeing at coffee time down at the cafe that Zach bought it off a man over by New London.
What'd he pay for it?
Don't know. Looks in good shape, though. I think he said it was owned by a woman who died a few months ago.
Who would that have been?
I don't know. She must have not driven it much. That car's at least 10 years old.
No, it's not. It can't be more than 5.
Yes, it is. It's got that boxy look on the back, and they changed the body style on those things about 7 years ago.
How's Marion?
Well, I haven't talked to her lately. I called her last night, but she obviously didn't want to talk.
Has she seen or heard from Tommy since he moved away?
Not a word, as far as we know.
Oh, that is so sad. Those two were thick as thieves all through childhood. They were so cute.
Boy, when he left for good. It makes you wonder.
Oh, Arl.
Well, what kind of person just ups and leaves and doesn't come back?
Don't you start, Arl. Tommy did himself proud going off to New York and making a name for himself. Winning those awards for his plays, he's amounted to a lot more than if he'd stayed in this little two-bit town.
What kind of kid just ups and leaves and forgets his family and friends?
He did not forget his family, Arl. You know better than that. John and Esther talked to him.
Once or twice a year?
It might have been more than that.
It wasn't much more than that.
They visited him, too. Don't you remember that? Must have been 6 or 7 years ago.
6 or 7 years ago. You see your kid once in 12 years, and it's because you have to go visit him. Oh, he's got a close relationship with his children.
So, what if he never came back home? He has to be busy all the time. He certainly made a name for himself.
In New York City?
Well, that's something.
Who cares?
No one from this little town ever amounted to much, Arl. There he is, writing plays and winning awards. He's got to admit, that's pretty good for a local boy.
He went to school to be a minister.
Here we go.
A minister. When he graduated from high school, he said he was heading to school to follow God's call and ends up in New York with all them people.
Carl, stop it.
He turned his back on his family. He turned his back on his friends. He turned his back on his roots. He turned his back on God.
Arl, we don't know that boy's heart.
Now you just look at Virgil down the street there. Flew all those missions over Germany, wins all those medals, makes all the papers. What did he do? He came back here to his town of Hebron, Iowa, to settle down with his people. He becomes the postman and doesn't say a word about it.
That's different, Arl.
No, that's character.
Goodness.
What about your boy, Arl? As I recall, he said when he graduated that he was going to school to be a doctor, so he could come back to take old Doc DeFeer's place, right here in Hibbert.
So?
Well, so, how is the waste management business in Du Bois these days?
That's different!
From stage right, Abby DeHaas bounces onto stage, followed by her mother, Marion DeHaas. Abby is going on 12 years old. She's full of life and smiles, still very much a child at heart. Marion is in her late 20s.
Grandma!
Well, there's my little sugar plum. How are you doing?
Good.
What have you two been up to?
Oh, we drove to Des Moines today. Abby's been out growing all of her clothes, so we did some shopping.
You did? Did you get some cute clothes?
Mom and me both got a bunch of new clothes. They're beautiful.
Oh, good. I can't wait to see them.
Now, what did you go all the way to Des Moines for? They've got perfectly good clothes up at the shop on Main Street.
Yeah, perfectly good clothes that have been out of style for 5 years and cost twice as much.
Yeah, but you don't have to go to Des Moines.
Did you make snickerdoodles, Grandma?
Of course I did. You just go in the house and look on the counter.
Okay.
But don't eat too many. They're for the funeral tomorrow.
Just two.
Okay.
So besides contributing to the decline of rural economy, how are you, Marion?
Nice.
I'm good, Arl.
Your old neighbor's coming home tonight.
Really? I hadn't heard. Who would that be?
What? I was just making polite conversation.
You were just stirring the pot.
It's okay, Lola.
Have you heard from Tommy?
Now, Arl, that's none of your business.
No, Arl. I haven't heard from Thomas since he left town, just like everyone else.
Really? I just wondered.
Oh, stop it, Arl. You and I have talked about this a million times.
How are you doing, dear?
I'm fine, Mother. It's not a big deal. I could care less about Thomas' friends.
How much did you spend on your new dress?
The dress is for the mother-daughter night at church next month.
I don't think he's arrived yet.
Nope, not yet. A few cars without estate plates came through, but it wasn't him.
I don't care. I did not come over here to see if Thomas was back. I came over here because Abby knew Grandma was making snickerdoodles for the funeral tomorrow.
Do you think he'll have out-of-state plates? He'll probably fly in from New York and rent a car in Des Moines, don't you think?
A lot of those rental cars are from out-of-state.
No, they're not. Why would they get cars from out-of-state? They have plenty of good cars right here in Iowa.
People drive them from other states and they leave them.
They come here and don't go back? That doesn't make any sense. Nobody comes to Iowa to stay. Everybody's leaving for good, just like Tommy.
I'm leaving.
Oh, honey, don't leave. Stay a while.
Don't let these two old buzzers drive you off.
Abby, I'm leaving.
I'm staying at Grandma's.
Mom?
That's fine, dear. I'll send her home after a while. Oh, before you go, I found that casserole recipe you wanted. Why don't you go in and grab it?
Where is it?
I think it's on the end table on my end of the couch. If not, it's on the kitchen counter. Hunt around. You'll find it.
Okay.
Marion enters the house.
Whatever happened between the two of them anyway? Like Lola said, they were thick as thieves when they were kids.
I think only the two of them.
But they were dating, weren't they?
That's the funny thing. We don't know. She's never talked about it, even back then. We always kind of wondered.
Well, they were inseparable all the way through school. You just assumed.
I know. But we never knew if they were going together or if they were just good friends. We'd ask, and Marion would just shrug and say, "It is what it is."
Boy, it certainly drove Matt Schuler crazy.
No one had to drive him crazy. He was born that way. Chip off the old block.
Old man Schuler must have gotten into some of that Agent Orange back in Vietnam.
Matt's been calling Marion every day since John and Esther passed.
You're kidding me.
Nope.
That boy doesn't have the sense God gave Dirt.
At least he had the sense to stay here in Hebron and help contribute to the community.
That boy hasn't contributed anything to this community but a yard that's a public eyesore and noise pollution from that stereo he blasts at all hours of the night.
Maybe the old man took all them drugs they were doing over there. They were all doing drugs in Nam.
What's Matt saying to Marion?
She won't talk to him.
And it started when John and Esther passed. Yeah.
The accident was in the morning, and the first call was in the afternoon.
Well, now, that makes you wonder.
Well, he probably figured that John and Esther passing would mean Tommy was coming back.
But is he jealous? What would make him up and start calling like that?
I don't know. He pined away for Marion all through school. She never gave him the time of day. We were shocked when she was voted prom queen and went to prom with him. We figured she'd go with Tommy. But whatever happened between the two of them ended after prom. And she hasn't ever given him the time of day since.
Like Arl said, he's a bit like his old man.
Abby's seen in the screen door of the house.
Grandma?
Yes, sweetie?
Can I try some of your makeup?
Sure. Make sure it's okay with your mom. Just use the makeup on that bottom shelf. Your mom can show you what you can use.
Okay.
Abby runs from the door.
I just wish we knew what happened between all those kids.
They were in a love triangle.
Oh,
they were in a love triangle, and Marion got pregnant with Tommy and skipped town to avoid the responsibility. And crazy Matt Schuler has always been jealous.
Arl, we don't know that. We don't know that, do we?
Never said a word.
Makes you wonder. Don't you think Abby wonders?
If she and Marion had talked about it, the subject would never come up.
Well, did you ask Abby?
A gunshot is heard in the distance. Everyone turns towards the back of the stage, then scrambles as if in a well-choreographed drill. Betty heads for the door to warn her granddaughter.
It's old man Shuler.
Speak of the devil.
He's back in Nam again.
We'd better call Sheriff to cook.
Nah, it's the sheriff's fishing night. He'll be gone for hours.
Well, he's got deputies.
When the shots were fired, Betty headed to the screen door.
Abby?
Yes, Grandma?
Old man Shuler's having a spell again. I want you to sit on the floor. Shut and lock that bathroom door right now. Do you hear?
Yes, Grandma.
Betty returns to the group. Marion exits from the house at the same time.
Now, Mother, you ladies get in the house. Arl and I will try to find him.
You be careful.
Oh, don't worry, Mother.
It's all right. Bob's never hurt anyone. Just because he's crazy doesn't mean he's dangerous.
He has a gun.
It's all right, Betty. Go on into the house.
Arl and Dean exit stage left.
Let's get into the house.
I'm headed home, Mother.
You are doing no such thing. Not with old man Shuler having a spell.
Mother, Mr. Shuler is a nice man and a Vietnam veteran who has the occasional flashback. Despite the way everyone in Hebron talks about him, 95% of the time he is quite lucid and perfectly normal. He has never hurt so much as a kitten.
You don't know that.
Goodbye, Mother. Send Abby home as soon as Dad and Arl have saved the day.
Marion, I'm serious.
So am I, Mother. I'm going home.
Marion begins to exit. Lola follows after.
Lola!
Go on in the house and check on Abby. I want to talk to Marion.
Lola!
It'll be all right, big sister. Go check on your granddaughter.
Shooing her back in the house. Exasperated, Betty storms back into the house.
Marion!
I'm going home, Aunt Lola.
I know you are, dear. That's not what I want to talk to you about.
What?
Come on over here and swing with me.
Marion sits on the swing next to Lola.
I remember pushing you and Tommy in the swings when you were kids.
Yeah, that's been a few years.
Doesn't seem that long to me.
Yeah, I'm sure. It seems like just yesterday Abby was born.
How are you doing, dear?
I'm fine, Aunt Lola.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
When you were a little girl and you had your first crush, who did you tell?
You.
Kenny Lindhoven. First grade, do you remember?
He held my hand after school.
And you wanted to know...
if I could kiss him.
And if you could kiss him, and if God would be okay with him.
Oh, Kenny.
Yeah, it's a good thing you didn't end up with Kenny.
Where is he, anyway?
Well, last I knew, he was selling vacuum cleaners in Southern Missouri.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, be thankful you're not living in a single wide in the Ozarks.
That's for sure.
When you got your first period, who did you turn to?
You.
I understand, sweetie. God bless your mother. She's the sweetest thing on God's green earth, but when it comes to talking about anything uncomfortable...
Oh, I only know that too well.
She means well.
I know.
And she loves you.
I know.
So, Marion, as your favorite aunt.
My only aunt.
As your favorite aunt. And the one woman you can turn to about the theological implications of kisses or having your first period. I want to know, how are you doing?
Sad.
You are.
Dawn and Esther were the greatest.
Yes, they were. That's not what I meant.
I know that's not what you meant. I'm sad. And anxious and scared.
Have you talked to Tommy since he left?
No.
Written?
No.
Oh, sweetie.
It's not a big deal.
Marion.
What?
Say what you want to those old buzzards, but you and I both know that the dress you bought in Des Moines today was not about the mother-daughter banquet. Was it?
It's been a long time.
Yes, it has.
Will you even remember me?
What are you talking about?
It's been 12 years. He lives in New York City and goes to Broadway galas and rubs whatever with gorgeous models and actresses and...
You know, you're not the only young person to confide in me.
Is that right?
That's right. Now, I never, ever, ever betray a confidence. When you told me about that sucker you stole from Gosling's? Do you remember?
You walked me down there and made me confess and give them their nickel.
Yes, but I never said a word to anyone about that.
You didn't have to. Mrs. Gosling told my mother at the Bible study that night.
That's beside the point. I refuse to speak to your mother or anyone else about the incident.
Thanks, Aunt Mola.
You're welcome. My point is, I don't betray confidences. But I will tell you that a certain young man, who shall remain nameless.
Nameless.
Yes. Though I tell you he used to live next door to you.
I wonder who that was.
But I'm not going to say, but this young man came to your Aunt Louise in tears.
Tears.
Yes.
Thomas?
I'm not going to say his name.
Okay.
He was in tears, and he wouldn't go into details, but he wanted to know if a girl goes to a dance with a boy.
A dance?
Prom, let's say.
Oh, God.
Did that mean that she for sure liked him?
And you said?
I told him no. I told him that girls sometimes make very stupid decisions.
You can say that again.
Marion, sweetie, you know you can trust.
Yes, Aunt Lola, I know.
There's a shotgun blast off stage, and we hear Old Man Schuler from off stage right.
The whole place is crawling with them.
Oh, Lord, we better get in the house.
You got in the house. I'm going in the house. You go in the house. I'm going home.
X-ray Delta, this is Foxtrot Alpha. I've lost him again. Over.
Marion.
It's okay. Thanks, Aunt Lola. I love you.
I love you too, sweetie. Call me.
Lola enters in the house and Marion exits right, passing Arl and Dean, who enter just as Old Man Schuler enters from stage left. He carries a shotgun and has a backpack on. He sees Dean and Arl and immediately crouches down, making a gesture to tell them to do the same. Dean and Arl oblige.
What in God's name are you two doing out here? Don't you know Charlie is all over the place?
We've been all through here and we haven't seen anyone named Charlie.
You boys with 2nd Battalion?
Yeah, yeah. We were told to clear this area. It's all clear. The gooks are all gone.
Old Man Schuler puts it down his shotgun and takes off his backpack. He begins to rummage through it, eventually finding an imaginary walkie-talkie.
I don't think you're supposed to call them that.
What's that?
Gooks.
Not now we don't, but back then you did.
No, I didn't. I never called Oriental people gooks.
I didn't mean you. The army. Back in
Nam. But I wasn't in the army, Arl, and neither were you.
X-ray Delta, this is Foxtrot Alpha. Hey, Shorty, I hooked up with 2nd Battalion. They say the sector is all clear. Over.
It's all clear. No Charlie gooks to worry about. You can head back to your base.
Our orders were to watch this area. You can go back home. Or to your base, I mean.
Yeah, Shorty, I'm headed back to base. Over.
Old Man Schuler stands, and Arl and Dean follow, groaning a bit with the effort required.
Well, it looks like some college boy at HQ screwed up things again, sending us both out here.
Sure does.
Hey, we've just been, relieved, that's it. We've been relieved of duty. How about we take you back to base, then we'll catch a ride back to our, battalion.
Fine by me. If Charlie shows up on the way back, I could use a couple of extra guys.
Dean begins to exit stage right, leading Old Man Schuler.
I think your base is this way.
Yeah, come on. I'll buy you boys a beer when we get back.
They exit stage right.
I was just wondering, do you take a lot of them drugs back to your base?
Lola and Betty peer through the screen door, slowly make their way outside as they know it's safe.
Looks like the boys have it under control. They'll get him back home and settle down.
I swear, Betty, Lola, someday that man is going to hurt somebody. Thank God he never has. He's done so well the past few years. He hasn't had a flashback for, I can't remember the last one.
4th of July parade, 4 years ago.
Really?
Yep. Old Man Schuler thought the clown that was throwing out candy was throwing hand grenades. He jumped off the fire truck and
I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah, broke his horn and everything.
Was he hurt?
Oh, no. Matt was on the fire truck, too. Once he saw what was happening, he got his dad back home quick.
What about Chuckles?
He was fine. The horn was the only casualty.
I wonder what caused him to go off again.
It was probably Matt going crazy this week.
Lola.
I bet it was. Matt is just as insane as his old man. I swear, Betty, some days, this little town makes me so crazy.
A car is heard pulling in, and the engine cuts off. Two car doors are opened and closed. Betty suddenly stiffens, and Lola follows. Betty looks at Lola, and there's a moment of realization. The two women get up from their chairs and silently tiptoe downstage until they can peer around the house on the left.
That's him.
It is. Oh, Betty, he's not alone.
You're right.
Is he married?
No. John and Esther would have said something.
Well, maybe he didn't tell them.
And Tommy wouldn't do that. Besides, she looks old.
What's Marion going to do when she finds out he's married?
Oh, I think she looked this way. Quick!
They quickly return to their chairs and try not to look conspicuous as they glance over the house that left. Thomas Prinz and Gladys Iskowich enter from stage left. Thomas is about 30. His attire is business casual, but well-appointed. Gladys is in her 40s or 50s, with big hair, a lot of makeup, and thick New York Jewish accent. Her attire screams New York. Thomas enters lugging a huge, bright, heavy suitcase. Gladys follows with a small, black, rolling suitcase. The two of them are engaged in conversation as they enter.
Oh, my God. And this is the house you grew up in?
Yes, Gladys. This is where I grew up.
Wait, I love Iowa.
Oh, give it some time, Gladys. You've only been here an hour, and that was in the car.
Oh, it looks like that painting. You know, the guy with the pitchfork and his ugly little wife, that one.
American Gothic, Gladys. It's called American Gothic. Thomas lets his suitcase fall to the ground with a thud. He is out of breath and looks up at the four or five stairs leading to the door of the house as if it's Mount Everest.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The one Paul Newman uses on the label of his salad dressing.
I'm sure Paul Newman's daughter is glad to know she's the ugly one.
It's Paul Newman, sweetie. Anyone next to Paul Newman is the ugly one.
Okay, let's get this suitcase in the house. I told you this was going to be a couple of days. I could swear that you packed this much for our last book tour.
I didn't know what to wear in Iowa, so I just packed it all. Oh, I need to get one of these little things with the wheels. They're so much easier.
What you need is that husband you're always talking about finding. Then he would be responsible for lugging your suitcase, not me.
The right man never came along, sweetie. Love's a mysterious thing. Finding the right man is like finding a good Jewish deli in Iowa. But when I find him, oy, he's not only going to know what hit him. He's not going to know what hit him. A suitcase with the wheels on it, however, that I could find at Macy's.
They don't make them this big, Gladys. For this, you don't need wheels, you need a forklift.
Quit complaining, sweetie. Take it inside. Hello?
Oh, dear God. Gladys crosses to Lola and Betty with her hand extended. Gladys is excited and thrilled like a child looking at a strange animals in a zoo for the very first time. Lola and Betty rise, smile, and nod with Midwestern deference.
Hello, I'm Gladys.
Hello there.
How do you do?
Hi, Mrs. DeHaas. Hi, Mrs. Van Damme. May I introduce Gladys Iskowich?
Oh, Tommy.
Betty walks over, gives Thomas a hug, which he graciously accepts.
I'm so sorry about your folks.
Thanks, Mrs. DeHaas.
They were good people. It's such a shame.
Thanks.
We're glad you're home.
Thanks. It's been a while.
We're so proud of you, Tommy. I mean, really, going off and becoming a famous writer and all. John and Esther were so proud. We all are. I've been keeping track of all the awards and all.
Thank you, Mrs. Van Damme.
Doesn't he look good?
He looks good.
Thanks.
So, how long have you and...
Oh, 6 years.
6 years?
Mm, 6 best years of my life.
Really?
Mm. She's my agent, Mrs. Van Damme.
Agent? Oh, I see.
She's his agent.
His
agent. I'm his agent.
Well, we better get the luggage in the house.
Oh, so you're staying with Tommy.
Yeah.
In the house here.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the Hebron Ritz-Carlton was all booked up.
We do have a guest room if you...
It's okay, Mrs. DeHaas. Gladys can stay in the guest room here at the house. You don't have to worry about anything going on.
Well, of course not.
Of course not. We weren't thinking that...
Well, Betty, we better get the rest of the ham buns ready for the funeral.
Yeah, you're right.
It was certainly nice meeting you.
Yes, nice meeting you.
Well, the pleasure's mine. We'll be seeing you around, I'm sure.
Yes, you will. We are right next door.
Come on, Gladys. Thomas ushers Gladys over to the steps and begins to haul the luggage into the house. They exit into the house.
She's staying in the house with him.
She's his agent. He said so.
But how's that going to look? He's single. She's single. They're in the same house.
How do you know she's single?
She wasn't wearing a ring.
Oh, Betty, they are adults. And she's obviously much older than he is.
I'm sorry, but that's just not right. John and Esther would never have approved of that.
You don't know that.
Come on, I better call Marion.
She begins to exit towards the house. Lola follows.
I'll finish up those ham buns. Sure is good to see Tommy. I'm so proud of him.
As they enter the house, Arl and Dean enter from where they exited.
Well, looky there. There's a car in John and Esther's driveway.
Tommy must have gotten here. I see he's driving one of those Japanese cars.
Well, that's probably not his car. He probably rented it at the airport.
Oh, and they don't have American cars at the airport?
Maybe they were out.
Yeah, right. Who's that?
I don't know. Looks like a woman.
Of course it's a woman. Tommy brought a woman home with him.
Looks that way. She doesn't look familiar.
Well, I'll be. Gotta be an explanation for that.
An explanation for what?
Bringing a woman home. I thought it'd be a man.
Oh, Tommy's not gay.
He writes plays.
Shakespeare wrote plays and he wasn't gay.
How do you know? I read the other day that Shakespeare never lived.
Well, whether he did or didn't live, he wrote plays and he wasn't gay.
Well, Shakespeare wasn't on Broadway. Tommy writes plays on Broadway. And they're all gay on Broadway.
I'll swear. Sometimes.
Gladys enters once again, headed back to the house. She sees Arl and Dean.
Hello.
Oh, hi there.
Hello.
I'm Gladys Iskowich.
Dean DeHaas.
I'm Arl Van Dam. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Are you the neighbors?
I am. I live next door here.
I live up the hill there, next to Dog DeBeer's house.
Oh, that's nice. Town this size having your own doctor.
Oh, we don't have a doctor anymore. Dr. Beer died about 10 or 12 years ago. Committed suicide.
Oh.
Yeah, a good old doc. He was a good man. Had a problem with the bottle, though.
He was an alcoholic?
Yeah, I don't know if you'd say that he was an alcoholic. At least not in the way you think. You know, staggering around drunk.
He was a functioning drunk. He drank a lot. But it didn't seem to impair his judgment much.
At least not until his wife died.
Yeah, it got worse after Helen passed. Now everyone goes to medical clinic in Newton. That's the way it is these days. Doctors got to make all that money, so they stay away from small towns like Hebron. We got to drive up to Des Moines if you need a doctor these days.
Oh. I think I met your wives. They were just out here.
Oh, yeah? Well, I bet you did.
We just got here. Thomas and me. I left my pills in the car, so I had to come out and get them.
Pills?
Yeah. Blood pressure. I got it from my father's side. They were in the deli business. Too much red meat.
So you came with Tommy, did you?
Yes, I didn't want him to be alone. You know, his parents dying like that. So sudden and all.
It's a tragedy.
So tragic. It's awful.
And the whole town's broken up about it.
Have you known Tommy long?
6 years we've been together.
6 years?
Yeah, like I told your wives, the 6 best years of my life.
Is that right?
He is the best client an agent could ask for.
Client?
That's Arl's line.
Client? Oh, you're his agent or something?
Yeah. Yeah. 6 years now. I'll never forget the day he walked through my door out of the blue. I'm telling you, my career was on life support. Show business was on my mother's side. Grandpa Weinstein made a killing in vaudeville. Made a killing in the Poconos back in the day. By the time I got the family business, it was 2 months from the final curtain.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was almost over. Then Thomas Prince walked through the door.
A real lifesaver, huh?
Oh, my God. Saved my career. Changed my life. He's such a good boy.
Well, he comes from good people. That's the way we grow them here in Hebron.
I'm sure. Did you know his parents well?
All their lives.
Is that right?
Well, people around here, they're usually from here. But we don't get a lot of folks moving in. If anything, people are moving out. Going to Des Moines or Chicago, or in Tommy's case, New York.
Everyone around here calls him Tommy, don't they? Oh, I think that's so adorable.
Can't seem to convince young people to stay these days, except Dean and Betty's daughter, Marion. She and Tommy dated back in high school.
Is that right?
Well, I'm not sure you could say they dated. They were close, I mean.
Does Tommy ever talk about Marion?
No, he never mentioned her.
Really?
Thomas Prynne steps out of the house, checking to see what's taking Gladys so long. He sees her talking to Arlene and heads right over to rescue her.
No, but that's not surprising. Thomas has never been too open about his private life.
That's interesting, because Tommy left town right after Marion found out...
Hi, Mr. Van Dam. Mr. DeHaas.
Oh, Tommy!
Tommy, welcome home. It's great to see you.
It's great to see you, too.
We're sure sorry about you folks.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
The whole town is broken up about it.
Thank you.
It'll be a big turnout at the funeral tomorrow morning. There's a whole caravan coming down from the family camp by Cedar Falls.
Your folks meant a lot to a lot of people.
I know. They were special. There's an awkward silence. Well, Gladys, your tea is ready. We better...
We were just telling Gladys about Marion.
Arl!
Really? And what were you telling her?
Well, about how Marion and you...
Have you ever talked to Marion since she got back, Tommy?
No, I haven't. How is Marion?
She's doing fine. She teaches up at the elementary school, second grade.
Really? That's great. I'm sure she's a great teacher.
You should see her daughter, Abby. She's such a cute little thing.
I'll bet she is.
She's, how old is she, Dean?
Arl, you know very well that Abby is almost 12.
12. That's right, 12. Let's see, so, you didn't ever see Marion's girl, did you, Tommy?
No. No, I didn't.
You were gone by the time Abby was born.
Yeah, I was, but I'm guessing that I'll see Marion and her daughter at the funeral tomorrow?
Sure. Mary and Abby loved your folks. Esther was always taking her lemon cake because she knew how Abby would drag her mom over for a piece.
Mom's lemon cake could do it. I'm going to miss that. Well, I'll look forward to seeing Marion and her daughter tomorrow.
All right, then. Is there anything you need, Tommy?
No, we're good.
You sure?
I'm sure, Arl, but thanks.
Well, you just let us know if we can do anything.
Gladys, why don't we go in before the tea gets cold?
Sure, hon.
Gladys follows Thomas towards the house, Arl and Dean watching them go.
Who's Marion? Everyone's talking about Marion.
She was my neighbor. My friend.
Really? Because I'm getting a feeling that those two are thinking that...
Thomas gives a look and a smile to Arl and Dean and then follows Gladys into the house.
For Pete's sake, Arl, you have all the tact of an atomic bomb.
What? I was just making conversation. Don't you want to know if Tommy is Abby's dad?
If either Marion or Tommy had wanted us to know that, they'd have shared it a long time ago. It's none of our business.
Well, it seems to me that Abby ought to know who her father is.
Who died and put you in charge of what Abby ought to know, Arl? You're just mad because Tommy moved away from Hebron and became all famous. As if anyone who ever grew up here should stay here.
And what would be wrong with that? So Tommy is a great writer. We all know that he is. So why doesn't he stay here in Hebron and write? We haven't had a newspaper in 20 years. People might like that.
And Tommy might like to make enough money to live on. There are 312 people in Hebron, Arl. It's not exactly a newspaper publisher's dream.
There's 318 people in Hebron, to be exact. And maybe if we had a paper... more people would stay here.
Oh, yeah. That'd make them stay. Live in Hebron. We have a newspaper. You're nuts, Arl. Come on. We'd better let the girls know we're home safe. Betty probably thinks we got our head shot off again.
Arl and Dean exit into Dean and Betty's house. There's a beat. Thomas walks out onto the porch. He is holding a cup of tea. He gives a quick glance to see if the coast is clear of Dean and Arl. Gladys walks out behind him with a cup of tea. They sit on the porch together. Well, that's better. Sorry, Gladys. It's nicer out here. We'll have to give the air conditioner a chance to cool things off. My dad was tight-fisted, old Dutchman. He always turned the air off when he and Mom left the house. It's obvious it'd been shut up for a few days.
That's okay, hon. I like the fresh air.
Thomas pulls a pack of cigarettes out and holds it as if he's going to smoke it.
Speaking of fresh air, I thought you gave up smoking.
I did give up smoking. Just haven't given up on the idea of smoking.
The idea of smoking? Oy, I can't wait to hear this.
What? There's nothing to hear. I know smoking is bad for you, but if there are so many things about smoking that I think, in fact, are good for you.
Here we go. Now, smoking is good for you. What can possibly be good about smoking?
A handful of times each day I stop for a few minutes to have a smoke. Whatever I'm doing, I stop. I rest. It's good for me to stop and think once in a while rather than constantly doing. Life flies so fast. A little rest is a good thing.
There are other ways to do that.
Yeah, but nobody does it unless they have a reason to do it.
Oh, was that it?
No, and then there's the fraternity.
The fraternity of smokers.
Absolutely. Go anywhere in the world at any time of day or night, pull out a cigarette. Not only are you immediately identified as a member of the fraternity, but it's likely that you're about to actually meet a complete stranger merely because of the fact that you smoke. Buddy, can I get a light? Hey there, can I bum a smoke off you? Not to mention the shared experience of standing outside in a bone-chilling winter wind to have a smoke at the same time. Your comrades, your survivors, your brothers and sisters. You talk, you laugh together, you have 5 minutes to get to know one another while you enjoy a cigarette. Smoking is fellowship. Smoking is community. Smoking could be the answer to world peace.
And smoking will kill you.
Why are we so convinced that longevity of the whole is the Holy Grail? So I live to be 100. Is that such a great deal? If the last 15 years are spent in a nursing home, not knowing who I am while my family pines away in guilt that they hate coming to see me?
Ah, so now smoking is virtuous because it's saving your family from guilt?
And money.
Oh, dear God.
Look, all I'm saying is that long life isn't necessarily good life.
I can't believe I'm hearing this. Your parents just died a tragic, premature death. Wouldn't you do anything to have more time with them?
Yes. Yes, I would. But you know what? My mom used to always say that she hoped that when the time came, they would go quick. She didn't want either herself or dad to slowly waste away in a nursing home. The only way she was. That's the way she was. She didn't want to be a burden to her only son. So you're right. I'd give anything for even one more day with both of them. But in the end, my mom got her wish.
So, your mother would be okay with you smoking so you can die an early death and won't be a burden on your loved ones.
Hey, I'm not defending smoking. I quit. I'm just saying that not everything about smoking is bad.
So you're still saying smoking is good?
Gladys, you're twisting my words. But just to irritate you further, I'll argue that it is debatable. Smoking is pleasurable. It gives me blissful moments of rest each day. It gives me a worldwide fraternity of brothers and sisters. It introduces me to amazing characters, some of whom have ended up in my plays and have made me plenty of money.
So now I'm indebted to smoking for my paycheck? What am I, Philip Morris? Smoking kills you. It gives you emphysema. It gives you black lung. It causes cancer. It leaves you stooped over hacking up your lungs while you wheel your little bottle of oxygen down the hospital hallway.
Good point.
With your bare, bony butt sticking out the back of your hospital gown for the whole world.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, you should have seen my Uncle Ira. Ira Eskovic. Wheeling his oxygen bottle down the nursing home hallway with his pasty white little butt cheeks sticking out for his 10-year-old niece to see.
Must have been awful.
You have no idea.
I'm sure I don't. Anyway, like I said, I gave up smoking. I just haven't given up the idea of it.
So, now you sit outside with your unlit cigarette.
And pretend I'm smoking.
You're mental. You're such a sweet boy. You're a complete mental case. Fine. Pretend to smoke. I just want you around on this earth as long as possible. I'd rather visit you in the nursing home with Alzheimer's than the hospital with lung cancer.
You just want me around because you don't have a husband, and I'm the only one who will drag your suitcase across the country for you. Mm. I'd rather I keep writing so you get your commission, and you'll be long gone before I get Alzheimer's or lung cancer.
Boy. You know how to break it gently to a lady. And speaking of not being married, it's no wonder you haven't found Mrs. Wright.
Arl Van Dam and Dean Haas walk out of the Haas house stage left, begin walking forward. They are talking.
All right, Mother. We will. Be back in a second.
How many do you think?
She thinks 24 ought to be enough.
Hello again.
Hello.
Everything all right with the house?
A little warm inside. I think the folks turned off the air conditioner before they left. We're letting it cool off.
We should have thought of that. Of course, John and Esther turned the air off. John was so tight, he turned the air off when they went for a walk. God rest his soul. Sorry, Tommy, I didn't mean to speak ill of the... Well,
don't worry about it. Dad always was proud of his frugality.
Well, why don't the two of you go in the house with Betty and Lola? It's nice in there. Make yourself at home.
Thanks, Mr. DeHaas, but we're fine. It's nice out here. House is probably already cooled off.
Suit yourself. The women are sending us to the store for some more buns. Betty's afraid we're going to not have enough.
Is Gosling still open?
They close at 5, but Betty called Herman, and he's going to meet us down there.
A store? I should go. I need a bagel for breakfast in the morning. Bad things happen if I don't have my bagel.
You're welcome to come along. I'll show you around Main Street.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Gladys stands, heads down the steps.
You go on ahead to the store. I'm going to talk to Tommy for a bit.
All right, then. Come on, Gladys. I'll give you the grand tour. Shouldn't take too long.
Gladys and Dean exit. Arl steps up next to Thomas on the steps. He notices a cigarette in Thomas's hand.
You're a smoker, Tommy?
No, not anymore.
I suppose you know your dad used to like a cigarette now and then. Kids always know their parents' secrets.
Yeah. Used to keep a stash of cigarettes in the shed. Used to always head out to work in the shed after dinner. Mom never said a word.
Oh, I think your mom gave him an earful from time to time, but she'd stay quiet in front of you. She wouldn't want to admit it in case you didn't know. But, of course, you did, because kids always know the secrets of their parents.
Like the fact that you and Dad and Mr. DeHaas would meet in the shed to have a little nip at the bottle of Old Crow in the bottom drawer of Dad's tool cabinet?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't.
So, how you doing, Tommy?
Doing all right, Arl.
It's a shame about your folks.
Yeah, thanks. It was sudden.
Must be strange to be back here in little old Hebron after spending all them years in the Big Apple.
Yeah, I guess. In some ways it feels like it's been forever, but in other ways it feels like, you know, it feels like a comfortable old sweater you pull on each fall. Haven't worn it for a long time, but it's as familiar as the last time you pulled it off.
Yeah, there's something special about the little town. Lots changed since you left, though.
Not many businesses left uptown.
Nope, not many. Cafe still does okay. Gosling's is still open for now, but Herman's been trying to sell it for the past few years, and no one's interested. It'll probably close up when he retires.
What happened to the farm and home store?
Sam DeCook bought it, but then figured out it was better to combine it with the store in Cedar, so we have to drive over there.
Makes you sad, doesn't it, Arl?
I just don't get it. The land around here has been growing a lot more than corn and beans for several generations. It's grown families, good people, and good, honest businesses that kept the community going. Now, everyone wants bigger and faster and more crap than they could possibly need. I don't get it. What about you, Tommy?
What about me?
Weren't you going to be a minister? You were always talking about that back in the day. You know, before you graduated. You're going to go to seminary and come back and pastor the church here.
I don't know what to tell you, Arl. That was the path I thought I was going to when I left, but suddenly found myself in a different place than I intended. Wrote a script as part of a class at school. Found I had a passion for it. The script wound up at a national contest, won an award, and suddenly I was a writer.
You ever think you'll be a minister?
Who says I'm not?
Come on. You know what I mean. Minister for real. Seminary trained and official.
Ministers aren't made by seminaries, Arl. If they were, and Jesus and his 12 disciples wouldn't have made the grade.
So you think you're a minister?
Well, if your definition of ministry is being a pastor of a church, then you've got crammed into a really small box.
So what you're saying is the way you see it, you're a minister with these plays you write.
Are you writing my plays, Arl?
No. Do they talk about Jesus?
No. But I hope they reveal him. I mean, what did Jesus talk about in public? Farmers, fields, fathers, sons, workers. He spoke truth in simple little word pictures. I like to think I follow that example.
You got an interesting way of looking at things, Tommy.
So do you, Arl.
Well, that's too bad.
Is it?
Yep. Our little church is going to need a pastor. Preacher's moving at the end of the summer, going to a church up in Minnesota. We had a hard time finding him. No one wants to take a church like ours anymore.
Betty and Lola enter out of the DeVries house. They're talking, and Betty carries a watering can.
Don't you worry about it, Lola. It won't take me long to finish the ham buns.
Are you sure? I don't want you to have to do it all by yourself.
I'm fine. Go on home.
Hello, ladies.
I thought you went with Dean to Gosling's.
Nope. Dean took Tommy's lady friend. I stayed back to talk to Tommy a bit.
Well, we better go home tomorrow. I've got to finish laundry if we're going to have the clothes for the funeral tomorrow.
All right. Good talking to you, Tommy.
You too, Arl.
It's nice to see you, Tommy.
You too, Mrs. Van Dam.
See you in the morning.
Arl and Lola exit.
Are you doing okay, Tommy? Is there anything you need?
I'm fine. House should be cooled off by now. I better go on in and unpack.
Well, if there's anything you need, you just call.
Thanks, I appreciate that. Thomas enters the house as Betty proceeds to water some of the plants outside her house. After a bit, Marion enters. She is wearing a dress.
Hey, Mom.
Hey, sweetie. You look nice.
Thanks. This is one of the dresses I got in Des Moines.
Oh, you just missed Tommy. He went inside 5 seconds ago. Let me go knock on the door.
No, Mother.
Don't you want to see him?
No, I mean, yes, I'd like to see him, but not right now. I didn't come over here to see Thomas.
Then what did you come over for?
Because I wanted to borrow that little travel steamer of yours to steam my dress for the funeral.
You came over to borrow my travel steamer? I could have sent it home with Abby.
Yes, but I wanted to get it done now.
So you put on a pretty dress to come over and borrow my travel steamer?
Mother...
All right, I'll go get it.
Betty exits into the house. Marion stares for a moment at the Prinz house. She walks slowly over towards the house, tries inconspicuously to peek in the windows to catch a glimpse of Thomas. In a moment, Dean DeVries and Gladys Iskowich, they're carrying grocery sacks. They silently stop to see Marion looking and watch for a moment.
Well, hello there, sweetie.
Daddy! Oh, hi, you startled me.
What you doing, sweets?
Nothing.
This is Gladys Iskowich.
Hello.
How do you do?
She's Tommy's agent.
Very nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you, too.
We've just been down to Gosling's. Mother's needed more buns for the funeral, and Gladys needed some bagels.
Did they have bagels?
Yes. Well, kind of. They aren't kosher, but hey, no one's perfect.
I'm sorry. I hope that's okay.
It's all right, honey. God will understand, I'm sure. My rabbi, well, we won't tell him.
Gladys is Jewish.
Thanks, Dad. I'm glad you explained it for me.
Have you seen Tommy?
No, I'm sure he's inside resting. I'm sure you're both tired from your travel.
Well, let me go get him. I'm sure he'd like to see
him. No, that's fine. I think he probably needs his rest.
Are you sure?
Very sure.
Marion is a school teacher.
Is that right?
Yes, I teach second grade.
Isn't that nice?
Is this your first time in Iowa?
It is. First time. I've traveled all over the country with Tommy on his publicity tours and all, but mostly it's in the big cities, you know, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco.
I'm sure.
But never to Iowa. I guess Iowa isn't real big on theater.
No. We're big on farms.
Oh, yes, I can smell.
Well, we have plays in schools and things. The high school does one every year.
Oh, of course.
What was that play the kids did at the high school last year?
The Clumsy Custard Horror Show.
Yeah, that was it.
And the an Ice Cream Clone Review.
Oh, well, isn't that nice?
Have you seen that one, Gladys?
Must have missed Broadway.
Shocking.
It was a good one. I also liked the one they did...
Daddy, I'm sure Gladys is tired after her long trip. Why don't we let her go in and get some rest?
Are you sure you don't want to see Tommy? I'll go get him.
No, no, really. I need to get Abby and get home. I'll see him at the funeral tomorrow.
Are you sure?
Very sure. Thank you. It was very nice to meet you.
Pleasure's all mine, dear. And thank you, Dee, for the tour of your little town.
Quite all right, Gladys. You enjoy some rest. I'm sure we'll see you tomorrow, if not before.
Gladys enters the Prinz house, and Dean and Marion walk over towards the lawn chairs as Betty exits from the DeVries house and joins them.
Daddy, seriously.
What?
The clumsy custard horror show.
What about it?
Gladys is an agent from New York, Broadway.
What? I was just pointing out that we have plays right here in Dubai.
Oh my gosh, Daddy, you are so embarrassing.
What's up?
Nothing, Mother.
Here's the travel steamer you wanted. I had to hunt for it. It was stuck in an old picnic basket in the cellar.
What? Well, I wonder who would have put it in there.
Betty hands the steamer to Marion, who looks at it, suddenly remembers she'd asked for it.
Oh, right. Thanks.
Will you go in and put those buns on the counter, dear?
Surely will.
Thank you. And tell Abby to start cleaning up. Her mother's here to pick her up.
Not a problem at all.
Dean exits into the house, leaving Marion and Betty. In the Prinz house, Thomas appears in the door and begins to open it. Seeing Betty and Marion talking, he quickly slips back just inside the house. He watches and listens from inside the screen door.
Marion, just go over there and talk to him.
Stop it, Mother. I don't care about Thomas Prinz.
Really?
Really. Is Abby ready? We should go.
Abby is fine. She's still playing with my makeup. I'll clean up her face and send her home in a bit.
Fine.
Marion turns to leave. She is stopped by her mother's gentle, commanding voice.
Marion.
What?
What happened between you and Tommy?
Nothing.
We both know that's not true. Listen, dear, your father and I have never asked you about it. We've respected your privacy.
And I appreciate that, Mother. I wish you'd continue respecting my privacy.
We love you.
I know.
We would never do anything to hurt you.
I know that.
So, why can't you just let us help you?
I don't need your help, Mother. There is nothing wrong.
Come on, Marion.
I am just fine. Why can't everyone understand that?
Who is Abby's father?
What?
I know I've never asked you that before.
Mother!
Was it Tommy? Oh,
Mom.
Was it Matt?
It's not important.
No?
No.
Then why are you crying?
Marion stands shaking her head for a long, silent moment as a silent battle wages inside her.
I'm going home. Will you please send Abby?
I will.
Thanks.
Marion begins to exit, but stops at her mother's voice. She does not look back at her.
Marion.
What?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to push.
I know.
I love you.
Marion exits without responding. Betty looks after her for a moment, then exits into the house. Once inside, Thomas steps out of the house from behind the screen door where he's been listening. He's holding a cup of tea. He stares off stage right where Marion exited, then sits down on the porch and pulls a cigarette out, holding it as though he's smoking, but not lighting it. Abby now exits the DeVries house.
Love you too. See you tomorrow.
Abby starts across the lawn and spots Thomas, who is looking at her. She smiles and waves at him. He smiles and waves back. She walks over to him.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Abby.
I guessed that. You're Marion's daughter, aren't you?
Yes.
How do you do, Abby? It's a pleasure to meet you. My name is Thomas.
I know, but Grandma and Grandpa call you Tommy.
You're right. They do.
Why?
Well, that's what they called me when I was your age. And that's what they still call me.
Does it bother you?
Does it bother you when they call you Abby? Or would you prefer Abigail?
Nobody calls me Abigail.
Would you like to be?
I don't know.
Well, Abigail, how about I try it, and you can tell me what you think.
Okay. But you didn't answer my question. Does it bother you that people still call you Tommy?
In some ways, I guess I do, but I understand it. So I don't let it bother me.
Understand what?
Well, I know sometimes grown-ups don't like things to change. They like things to stay the way they are. By calling me Tommy, they remember the kid that I was.
But you're not a kid.
No. But I like to think there's a part of me that's still like a kid. I don't want to grow up completely.
Like Peter Pan?
Yeah, like Peter Pan.
Sometimes I think that Grandma and Grandpa don't want me to grow up.
Yeah? What makes you say that?
They don't want me to get my ears pierced.
Hmm. What does your mom say?
She says I can when I'm 12.
Well, that's not too long now, is it?
Seems like forever.
Yeah. That's another reason grown-ups don't like things to change.
What do you mean?
Well, when you're almost 12, a few months feels like forever. The older you get, the more it seems like life goes faster and faster. Time flies, is what we adults always say. So we try to find ways to try and slow it down, like calling adults by kids' names, or trying to keep your grandkid from getting her ears pierced.
That's stupid. Why?
I think maybe it's because the faster time seems to fly, the more we have to face a really scary truth.
What's that?
That we're going to die.
Like John and Esther?
Yeah.
John and Esther were your mom and dad, weren't they?
Yes.
Are you sad?
Yes, Abigail, I am.
You don't seem sad.
Are you upset about your mom and grandma won't let you get your ears pierced?
Yes.
You don't seem upset.
Well, maybe I should act more upset.
Well, maybe I should act a little more sad.
Well, well, well. If it's not Thomas Prinz.
Hi, Matt.
Homecoming for Hebron's resident nerd.
Nice to see you, too.
Hey, Abby.
How's it going, Matt?
Good.
What are you up to these days?
Nothing. Hey, Abby, speaking of homecomings, did Thomas here tell you about homecoming our senior year in high school?
No.
Homecoming. That was the year we made it to the state quarterfinals, and I was the first team All-State. Your mom and I were homecoming king and queen. Did you know that?
No.
We beat Garwood 42-0. I rushed for 183 yards that night and scored 5 of our 6 touchdowns. Later that year, your mom and I were crowned king and queen. Did she tell you about that?
No.
We went to prom together. We had an awesome night. Do you remember that, Thomas?
No.
Oh, that's right. You weren't there. What did you do that night?
I don't know, Matt. I don't recall.
Yeah. You probably sitting at home writing your little plays.
I didn't write plays in high school. I started when I was in college.
Where's your mom, Abby?
She's gone.
Gone where? Gone home?
She moved to Canada. I'm living with Grandpa and Grandma now.
Funny. I think I'll go over and see her. How long are you staying in town, Thomas?
I fly back to New York the day after tomorrow.
Good. I'm going to go check on Marion. See ya.
Matt exits. Abby and Thomas watch him go.
He's weird.
You know how I told you that as you get older, time begins to fly?
Yeah.
Well, there are some people for whom time completely stops right about high school.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Are you my daddy?
Lights the black.
A cliffhanger.
Wow. Who wants cheesecake? This was the end of the first act, and our actors took a little intermission for a slice of Wendy's cheesecake and a cup of coffee. We'll fast forward now and pick up the beginning of the second act.
And she left.
So she and Thomas haven't...
No, they haven't seen or talked to one another as far as I can tell.
Okay. Very interesting.
And Tommy never mentioned Marion?
Oh, until yesterday, I didn't know she existed.
Gladys, does Tommy have any, you know... girlfriends?
Not really, other than a date to the occasional fundraiser or awards dinner. Doesn't show much interest in a relationship. And believe me, it's not for a lack of trying. I'm not such a bad matchmaker myself.
Like Fiddler on the Roof?
Yeah, exactly. It's a little curse God gave Jewish women who can't find a husband ourselves.
So, you've never been married, Gladys?
No, the right one has never come along. Can you believe it? Hoy, New York. The greatest city in the world, full of good men.
So you've never dated?
Oh, I've dated, darling. Several times. Every one of them was a putz. Don't get me started.
That's too bad. I just think everyone should be married. I can't stand to think of Marion going through life alone. And little Abby, she needs a daddy.
Well, sometimes I think I'm better off, you know what I mean? Why, if I finally do get a man, then I have to train him, and that feels like a lot of work.
Well, Mally, you never know. The right man comes along, he might just sweep you off your feet. That's what happens sometimes. It's like a lightning strike. You don't know what hit you.
Honey, the last time I got struck like lightning and didn't know what hit me, it turned out to be bad pastrami.
Arl and Lola exit the Prince house. Lola is carrying a cup of tea.
Hello there, Arl. Lola, where's Tommy?
He's inside getting changed. He looks a little worn out. He said to bring you this.
Oh, he's such a good boy. Thank you, dear.
It's been a long day for him.
Long day for all of us. John and Esther are going to be missed in this town.
That's for sure.
Speaking of getting changed, we better get in and get changed ourselves.
All right, dear.
Dean and Betty exit into their house.
Well, Laura, we should get home and get changed as well.
Hold on a minute. I need to clear something up with Gladys here.
What is it, dear?
Well, now, tell me something. You told me yesterday that Tommy never mentioned Marion.
We were just talking about that. No, dear, I didn't know anything about Marion until yesterday.
Isn't that interesting? So, does he have a girl back in New York?
Not really. He has a date for fundraisers and award dinners, but nothing serious. He keeps to himself, does his own thing. You know.
Well, that's very interesting.
Arl.
So you don't think he's, you know.
What, dear?
You know.
Oh, for goodness sake, Arl, Tommy is not gay.
Well, so what if he is? I'm just wondering.
No, dear. Thomas is definitely not gay. I can tell you that.
Okay, that's settled. Now we know.
We've always known, Arl. You're the only one who saw that.
I was hoping to get to talk to Marion today. I met her briefly last night, but we didn't get a chance to talk.
Oh, I know. She slipped in the back after the service started. I wish those two would just get together and talk it over. Whatever it was that got between the two of them.
Oh, come on, Lola. We all know what got between the two of them. She got pregnant.
You think Marion's daughter belongs to Thomas?
Yes, I do. I think...
Checks to see if Thomas is listening from the house, lowers his voice.
I think Tommy got Marion pregnant. Then, couldn't deal with the responsibility and skipped town. That's why he left.
I don't know, dear. Thomas is the most responsible person I know. That wouldn't be like him.
I know. A lot of people think it was Matt Schuler.
Excuse me?
Matt Schuler. He was at the funeral today. Sat on the left side, four rows from the back. He wore jeans and a black t-shirt.
I didn't notice.
Abby does not belong to Matt Schuler.
We don't know that.
Abby is sharp as a tack. She could not be Matt Schuler's child. That boy doesn't have the sense God gave her.
Maybe she takes after her mother.
So the question is, why hasn't Marion and Thomas talked? And why did she avoid him at the funeral today?
That's the question.
So Tommy never mentioned Marion? Isn't that interesting?
Guilty conscience. I'm just saying.
You've got to remember, Thomas is a thinker. You don't get much out of him. He thinks more than he writes, and he writes more than he talks.
He's always been that way. Took after Esther that way.
Well, come on, Arl. I want to get changed. It's bridge night with Dean and Betty, and I have things I want to get done before then.
All right. Well, Gladys, I'm sure we'll see you before we leave in the morning, but if not, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, you'll see us, I'm sure.
I hope you've enjoyed your visit.
Sorry I couldn't visit under better circumstances, but I've loved my visit. It's such a cute little town, and everyone's so friendly.
Well, you've got to visit us again.
I will. In fact, I wanted to take a little walk around and stretch my legs before going in.
Another good thing about Hebron, you can't get lost.
Enjoy your walk. Let's go, Arl.
All right. So long, Gladys.
So long.
Arl and Lola exit. Gladys looks around, stretches, begins to exit the opposite way. From upstage, between the houses, Old Man Schuler emerges. He looks normal.
Hey, you!
Excuse me.
Old Man Schuler steps out of the bushes and steps forward.
Who are you? What are you doing out here?
A man sneaks out of the bushes and he wants to know who I am?
Gladys stares at the old man's shoulder, expecting a response. He stares back. There's a moment before Gladys answers.
I was just getting ready to go for a walk.
A walk? In these parts? Don't you know it's dangerous?
Dangerous?
Yes, dangerous. Charlie could be hiding anywhere.
Charlie? Oh, I heard people talking about a crazy man in town. Is he around somewhere?
Charlie is everywhere.
Well, maybe I shouldn't take my walk.
What's your name?
Gladys. Gladys Iskowich. I came with Thomas Prince for the funeral.
Another funeral? We've lost a lot of good ones.
Isn't that the truth, sweetie? Seems the older I get, the more funerals I attend. Drop like flies.
Hey, I like you.
You do?
It's been a long time since I talked to a woman.
Really?
A long time.
You're not married?
No. Had a girl back home, but she sent me a Dear John letter.
So you're not from here?
Here. Don't be ridiculous.
But you live here now?
Hopefully they'll be sending me home soon.
Oh, really? You're here for a job or something?
It's a big job, all right.
So what's your job?
Say, you're cute.
Oh, go on. No, seriously, seriously, sweetie, go on. I want to hear more.
You were going for a walk, you say?
I was, but if it's dangerous...
I could escort you, keep you safe.
I thought you'd never ask. Lead the way, sweetie.
Stay close. I wouldn't want anything to happen to you.
Honey, you don't have to ask twice.
Been a long time since I had a woman on my arm.
Isn't that right? Well, I'm glad I could be here for you.
They exit. There is a beat. Marion enters slowly. She's carrying a Tupperware container. She goes to the Prince house to go to the porch. Walk towards the parent, then stops, turns and starts towards the parent's house. At that moment, Thomas exits the Prince house. Marion hears the door and stops. She hides from his sight line, but stands where she can watch him. He has changed clothes. He has a cigarette in one hand and a plane ticket in the other. He sits on the porch and looks hard at the plane ticket. Marion steps towards him, then back. Thomas catches the movement in the corner of his eye and turns. Hello? Who's there? Mr. Schuler? Is that you? He walks down the stairs slowly towards the place where Marion was hiding. He stops. Marion steps out into the open. Marion?
Hello, Thomas.
I wondered if I was going to get a chance to talk to you.
I'm in the book.
I didn't want to call. I wanted to see you.
My address is listed, too.
I thought I'd see you at the service or the reception. You made yourself pretty scarce. Marion does not answer. After a moment, Thomas motions to the lawn chairs down center. Will you sit with me? Marion walks towards the lawn chairs and sits as Thomas holds the back of the chair for her. He sits in the chair next to her.
I was at the church helping clean up after the reception. You left without taking the leftover cake, so I thought I should bring it by.
Thank you.
Do you smoke?
No, not anymore. But I think about smoking. Do you remember?
What, stealing cigarettes from your dad's stash in the shed?
Sneaking out into the woods behind Old Mill?
Acting like we were sophisticated socialites.
Talking for hours under the stars.
Seems like another lifetime.
Like I said, I think about smoking. Truth is, part of me liked it because I always thought about you while I was having a smoke. Felt like having you near.
I'm sorry about your folks.
Thank you.
It must have been a shock.
It was. It is. Not sure it's really sunk in. It feels really surreal.
I can only imagine. When was the last time you talked to them?
A week ago Sunday. We talked on the phone every Sunday afternoon.
Really? I never knew that. Your mom never told me that.
Really? I figured she was filling everyone in on the gossip.
Only the good things. She and your dad were happy to talk about the latest opening or the awards you won. But other than that, they were pretty tight-lipped. They didn't talk much about what you were up to.
Really? No, there wasn't that much to tell.
It might have been better for you if they had. I hate to break it to you, but the lack of information only created more speculation.
Ouch.
Yeah.
How bad?
Depends on who you ask.
I can only imagine what Arl came up with.
Let's just say he was surprised to see you show up in town with a woman.
Oh, wow.
Did your folks keep you up to date with the things back home?
Oh, yeah. The weather report, grain prices, blue plate special at the cafe. Got the weekly blow-by-blow.
I'm sure you were on the edge of your seat.
Of course. You know, actually, it was nice. I've never gotten truly used to New York. You know, it's always nice to have the weekly reminder that Hebron was still here. Things hadn't changed that much.
I hear you met Abby.
Yes. She's wonderful.
She's pretty special.
Beautiful, articulate, smart. Just like her mother. Who is Abby's father, Marion?
I see we're not beating around the bush.
Well, I don't really see the point. After burying both my parents today, I'm reminded I better make the most of the present. Besides, the rate things are going, I'm not sure if I'll get another chance to talk to you.
That's right. Because phones in New York probably don't connect all the way back to Iowa.
I don't know what to tell you, Marion.
You know what's really crazy? You are the first person in 12 years to ask me that question directly. Well, at least until yesterday.
Really?
Really. Took my mom 12 years and you coming back to town to get up the nerve. My dad was certainly not going to ask. None of my so-called friends ever asked. Not even Arl.
Wow. Not even Arl? That's saying something.
Why doesn't anyone just ask me who Abby's father is? Is it because they don't care? That can't be. We're such a loving, tight-knit community. Maybe it's because they do care. We love you so much that we just don't want to talk about it. And in doing so, the little piece of juicy gossip perpetuates itself. Whispers become conversations behind your back, which then become legend. Becomes part of the fabric of the community. Maybe that's the real reason no one asks. The truth is that in this little two-bit town, we need to have something to talk about each and every day at the cafe. We can talk about the weather. We can talk about the grain prices. We can talk about Old Man Schuler. That should cover about 15 minutes, but after that, what do we talk about? How about who is the father of Abby DeHaas? That's always good for an ongoing argument. Who's Abby's dad? Who did Sweet Marion spread her legs for? Let's talk about that.
I can't imagine what it's been like for you.
Yeah, well, what did you expect?
You still haven't answered the question.
Why did you leave town, Thomas?
Because I was 18. Because I graduated high school and it was time to...
Stop it. Why did you leave?
Because I was 18. Because I was confused and hurt and...
And I wasn't confused and hurt?
And I was selfish. And a coward.
Why didn't you come back? Why didn't you write? Why didn't you call, for God's sakes?
Thought about you all the time. Thought about writing. Thought about coming back. Thought about it every time I had a smoke. Stand there outside my building. Sometimes I was with neighbors, smoking together. Sometimes a stranger would stop by and bum a smoke off me and we'd stand and talk. Didn't matter. Whether I was with someone or by myself, somehow you were always there with me. Just like when we were kids sitting on the hill, Vermeer's pasture, smoking my dad's cigarettes and staring at the stars. Then I quit smoking. But I missed hanging out with the stars, with you. So I found myself going outside and standing there with an unlit cigarette in my hand just at the chance to feel you near. Think about riding. I could never find the words. It's crazy. I can give words to a million different characters, but I could never find the words to write you.
Great. That's just great. You were in New York City having a smoke with some fantasy of me. Back here in Iowa, I was changing diapers, finishing college, and doing my best to ignore the whispers from the hypocritical old witches in the back pew at church.
Back pew. Let's see, back pew. Stage left or stage... Couldn't be stage right. The back... That was Mr. and Mrs. Engels. It would have to be stage... Oh, yeah! Gladys Decker and Vivian Dunn. The widows of West 2nd Street. Are they still alive?
You hurt me, Thomas. You were the only person I could always count on, and I needed you, and when I needed you the most, and I turned to you and you weren't there.
I hurt you.
Yes.
You turned and I wasn't there.
Yes.
A match. A match. A kingdom for a match.
Sorry, I can't help you.
I hurt you. I seem to remember the other way around. What about me, Marion? You were the one person I could count on. My whole life, you understood me better than anyone else. You knew every secret. You knew my dreams. You knew my every fault, and you still were my best friend. And then, all of a sudden, bam! You start ignoring me. You act like I don't exist.
You don't understand.
You're right. I don't understand. I didn't understand why you suddenly shut me off. Then it was Matt Schuler, Mr. Hebron All-Star, and Marion DeHaas. Everybody look at the prom king and the prom queen. Don't they look perfect together? Marion's going to prom with Matt Schuler and partying with Matt and all of his admirers.
I know. I was stupid. I didn't know what else to do.
So?
So what?
So who's the father of Marion? Who is Abby's father? Because I know for certain it wasn't me.
That's really all you cared about, isn't it? You and your ego. I'm facing the scariest, most painful moment of my life, and all you care about is how it makes you look.
It has nothing to do with how I looked, Marion. I could care less what anyone in this town thinks of me.
Well, you made it perfectly clear when you left town and never looked back. You're right. You could care less.
That's not what I said, Marion. That's not fair.
Not fair? All right, Thomas, then tell me. What do you care about? Because you certainly didn't care about me.
I did care about you, Marion. Don't you get it? I loved you. I loved you so much, and the most painful moment of my life was when I turned around and you weren't there.
I needed you, Thomas.
And I needed you. I didn't know what to do, Marion. What was I supposed to do, to think? My best friend is treating me like a leper, and then all of a sudden she's pregnant? What were my options? Oh, stick around, stand up with you at the shotgun wedding with Matt Schuler.
Thomas, you don't get it. You're never going to marry Matt Schuler. You and I both know that Matt was and is a complete idiot.
So is that it?
Is what
is? Is Matt Abby's dad?
He wants to think he is.
Is he?
No.
He's not?
Feel better?
Not really. But that's what you wanted, wasn't it? Marion? Please, look at me. I know it wasn't me. You say it wasn't Matt. But you made sure that everyone would suspect that it was. You orchestrated the whole thing, didn't you, Marion? Talk to me.
Did they talk about me?
Excuse me?
Your folks. On the Sunday afternoon phone calls, did they ever talk about me?
Yeah. Mom did. All the time.
Really?
Mom would slip it in. Always so casual. Betty told me that Marion graduated. Isn't that nice? Or, Marion directed the play at the high school this week. Can't understand why no one has snatched up such a beautiful, talented young woman.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It was Mom. Queen of the subtlety.
Your mom was so sweet. She was always so good to me and Abby, and your dad. He was like another grandpa for her, and Abby loved your folks so much.
I wonder if Mom thought that Abby was her granddaughter. You still haven't answered the question.
Why should I, Thomas? What right do you have to know? What right does anyone have to know? You left, Thomas.
Yes, I did, and I'm sorry, but...
Yes, I went to the prom with Matt Schuler, okay? I did. Let's put this in perspective. Your fragile male ego was damaged. I was pregnant. Let's put things in a little perspective, okay?
Marion, I was 18.
So was I.
I didn't know what to do.
Well, you should have. You should have known.
That's not fair.
I don't care. I needed you to stick by me. I needed someone I could trust, and you left.
Have you told anyone?
Have I told anyone what?
You haven't, have you?
What's that got to do with it?
Marion.
I don't see...
Stop.
I am not...
Stop. Just stop.
Thomas?
Time out. Can we back up, please? Marion, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for everything. Sorry for leaving you alone. Sorry for running away. I'm sorry for not writing or calling or coming home. I am not finished. I'm sorry for letting my bruised ego blind me to what you were going through. I want to ask your forgiveness. I'd like to rewind 12 years. I want my best friend in the whole world to talk to me and to tell me the most painful secret she's kept locked away for so long. Marion, talk to me.
It was early March. Softball practice was starting up, our senior year. I was turning 18 in a few months. I had to have my annual physical form signed before I could play. Mom told me it was time for me to have my first woman's exam. You know how my Dutch parents are. I've got to have a physical for... How Dutch my parents are. I've got to have a physical for softball. Might as well kill two birds with one stone.
Marion.
Everyone in town knew about Doc's drinking. It was legendary. But he was a functioning drunk. Never let it stop him from doing his job. You remember how it got worse after his wife died?
Oh, my God.
I went in after school. He was drunk that day, and I knew it. Remember Geneva DeBeer, his old nurse? She had to have known. But she left the room after taking my vitals and didn't come back when Doc came into the room. What was I supposed to do? I was a kid. He was an adult. I was a doctor, for God's sakes. It all seemed so surreal. I felt paralyzed. I couldn't scream. I couldn't move. I just laid there and smelled his aftershave and his body odor and the alcohol in his breath.
Marion, I am so...
When I missed my period, I was worried. The morning of Mr. Dingman's Western Civ test on the Great Depression, I woke up and puked my guts out, and I knew.
You didn't
Who?
Tell?
Who was I going to tell, Thomas? Doc was the most respected man in this town, even with his drinking problem. No one wanted to know that Doc knocked me up. It would have ripped this town apart, and I did not want to be branded the poor little girl the Doc raped in his office. I sure as hell was not going to wear the scarlet letter on my chest for the rest of my life.
So you went to prom with Matt?
That's right. I went to prom with Matt Schuler, the biggest jerk in the world, and I gave myself an easy alibi.
You know people would think it was me. You know that everyone would think that I was the one that got you pregnant.
And what was really crazy is that no one asked.
To this day, no one knows.
No one even suspects. You took off shortly after it became public and gave people a reason to suspect that it was you anyway. Doc committed suicide a month or two later. Everyone concluded that it was his drinking and his grief over Helen that finally pushed him over the edge.
Yep, who would have ever imagined that he screwed one of his patients?
Yeah.
And you never said a word?
No one asked. No one really wanted to know.
Marion.
I don't know what I thought was going to happen. Doc was dead. You were gone. It was almost easier to live with the speculation than it was to put everyone through the pain of revealing the truth. The town was already grieving over Doc. He was the tragic hero.
Sorry.
Maybe if I told you from the beginning, things would have been different.
Matt Schuler enters.
Well, well, well. If this isn't nice. Here we are, all cozy. Tommy Prinz, Mr. High and Mighty, comes back for a day and thinks he can just take my girl.
Grow up, Matt. This is not high school, and I'm not your girl.
You certainly were on prom night.
Matt, stop it.
That's right, Tommy. Too bad you couldn't have been there on prom night.
Arl and Lola enter on their way to Dean and Betty's for bridge night. All right, Matt, that's enough.
Oh, Lord. Lola, you better get Betty and Dean out here.
Lola runs to the DeHaas house and returns with Dean, Betty, and Abby in tow.
You know, Marion, somehow I knew that I was going to find the two of you together.
So what of it?
So, I can't understand what you ever saw in this guy.
Quietly, Gladys and Old Man Schuler enter with their arms around one another. Gladys looks slightly disheveled.
Yeah.
No one notices their entrance. They stand back and observe what's going on.
What? That he's intelligent, thoughtful, and caring? Look, Matt, I have tried to be nice to you all these years, but I am done. I want you to stay away from me and Abby.
You can't do that.
What do you mean, I can't do that?
Why don't you just admit it, Marianne? Come on, admit it. After all these years...
Matt, don't do this.
Enough playing coy. Let's let everybody know once and for all, Abby is my daughter. You can't keep me away from her.
Matt, Abby is not your daughter.
You're just saying that.
I'm not just saying it. You would know you're not Abby's father if you had the brains to do the math.
Well, what are you talking about?
I made the mistake of sleeping with you once. Once. On prom night, which was the first week in May. A pregnancy lasts 40 weeks. If you count back 40 weeks from Abby's birthday, you'll find yourself in March. You are not Abby's father.
Well, then, who is the father?
There's a moment as Marianne looks around at everyone and then at Abby, who is standing next to Betty. Marianne looks conflicted as everyone stares, waiting for an answer. I am.
Thomas.
With a gasp, everyone turns and looks at Thomas.
Thomas.
I knew it. I knew he was my dad.
I told you.
We were kids. I was scared and humiliated, so I left town and I didn't come back. Marianne was gracious enough to keep it a secret all these years as a way of protecting me. Abby, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry that I didn't have the courage to stay here in Hebron, to be here for your mom and to do the right thing. I hope you can forgive me, and if it's all right with you, I think I'd like to stay here and try and make it up to you. Abby runs to hugs Thomas. Thomas then looks again to Marianne. That is... if it's okay with you.
I'd like that.
You haven't heard the end of this. I'll hire a lawyer. I'll force a paternity.
Boy!
Everyone turns and notices Old Man Schuler and Gladys. There's been a change. He's normal and coherent.
Sex is good for a lot of things.
You'll do no such
thing. Dad!
You've caused enough trouble for Mary and Abby. Things are going to be different from now on, and you're going to start by apologizing to them.
But, Dad, I...
You mind me now. Boy, I brought you into this world, and God help me. I'll treat you out. Now, you apologize.
I'm sorry.
Now, go on home. You and I are going to have a long overdue talking tonight.
Matt exits. Everyone is staring at Old Man Schuler, astonished by the change in him. Gladys is staring at him adoringly.
I apologize for all that me and my boy put you through these many years. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to see to it that we make it up to you.
Mom, I can't believe it. What's come over you?
Yeah, you're not a name anymore?
Well, I ran into Gladys here this evening, and we went for a walk together. It's funny. The more we talked, the better I felt. We just sort of hit it off, I guess. The one thing led to another, and I guess all I needed these years was the love of a good woman.
No, dear. Well, good woman, yes. Though I prefer exceptional, because, you know, who are we kidding? But right woman is what you really meant to say.
Thomas looks incredulously at Gladys, who catches it and shoots back a, what are you looking at, expression. Gladys?
Well, sweetie, what did you expect? I always told you that when the right man comes along, he's not going to know what hit him. I wasn't kidding, you know.
But Old Man Schuler?
Loves a mystery, sweetie. Don't try to make sense of it. You'll go crazy.
But the power of it will make you sane.
He's dueling a plane ticket, and he hands the plane ticket to Old Man Schuler. Here you go, Mr. Schuler. Why don't you take this plane ticket? I'm not going to be needing it. Why don't you take Gladys back to New York?
Thank you, Thomas. I've never been to New York before.
Oh, that's a fabulous idea. Come on, sweetie, we've got to get you packed. I am going to show you the town. Wait till you try the kosher deli down the street from my apartment. Corned beef to die for.
Come on, everybody. It's been a long day. The coffee's on. Why don't we all go inside and get a bite to eat?
Everyone begins to head to the Haas house, except for Thomas and Marion, who embrace once more, and Arl, who is standing and smiling at them, continuing to gloat that he was right.
Come on, you two.
You know what? If we're all going in for a bite, then I am going to make it a potluck. I have a refrigerator full of ham buns and potato salad I need to get rid of.
I think that's a great idea.
Go on in. I'll be there in a second.
Thank you.
No. Thank you. Marion heads into the DeHaas house. Thomas turns towards his house, and Arl is standing there.
Well, Tommy, I always knew it.
Knew what?
That you were Abby's father.
How'd you know?
Well, it made sense. Plus, Abby's such a sharp kid, just like you were, and I've always thought she looked like you.
Well, Arl, what can I say? Nothing escapes you.
Yep, well, wisdom comes with age, I guess.
That it does.
I'm glad you're back in Hebron where you belong.
Me too, Arl. Me too. Thank you for listening to this table reading of the play Ham Buns and Potato Salad by Tom Vanderwell. Copyright of this play is held by the author with all rights reserved.